The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Florence Nash from Triangle Radio Reading Service. Welcome to Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from the December issue of the AARP Bulletin, and there's a good chance I'll be reading a little from the December issue of Money Magazine as well. And I remind you that today's programming is generously underwritten by Salibi Chiropractic. Salibi Chiropractic welcomes the geriatric community with any neck, back, or hip issues. Call them at 919-782-4733. That's 919-782-4733. Now, first article from the AARP Bulletin is in from the Your Health section, and it's called Thanks for the Memories. In a recreated 1950s town, men and women with dementia rediscover their comfort zone. Mary Patterson bounds through the entryway of Glenertown Square with a giant smile. Since Mary's shoulder surgery in 2014, she hasn't been the same. She forgets everything 5 minutes after you tell her, says her husband, Ray. Normally sweet and even-keeled, Mary, 87, is now like two people, one the woman he's loved for most of his life, and the other an angry, sad, and lost soul who sometimes fails to recognize her husband. It's hard, says Ray, 81, who cares for Mary full-time. Very hard. But since Glenertown Square, a state-of-the-art dementia daycare facility, opened in August, Patterson says he's been able to take care of the bills again, read books, breathe. And when Mary comes home from Glenner, she is in a better mood and easier to be with. She doesn't have her memory back, he says, but there's a difference. Located in an industrial building along a nondescript boulevard in Chula Vista, California, just south of San Diego, Glenertown Square is a 9,000-square-foot indoor replica of small-town USA, where Eisenhower is still president, Buddy Holly sings over the PA system, and old movies like Rear Window play in 15-minute clips in the movie theater. An American flag with 48 stars flies inside City Hall near the shiny black 1959 Ford Thunderbird and across from Rosie's Diner, where pictures of Elvis, Audrey Hepburn, and James Dean hang from walls the color of cotton candy. A growing form of care. The creators of Glenertown Square hope to revolutionize dementia care through the use of reminiscence therapy, a palliative treatment for patients who have cognitive decline, but whose long-term memory remains at least somewhat intact. Glenertown Square is designed to capture the years between 1953 and 1961, when the average dementia patient was between ages 10 and 30, the time of life during which, research indicates, many of our strongest memories are formed. Senior Helpers, a national organization that provides Glenner's trained caregivers, is working with George G. Glenner Alzheimer's Family Centers to create another town square outside Baltimore. The goal is to build 100 more town squares nationwide by 2021. Each of the 14 storefronts within the town square represents an iconic place that participants might have visited in their past, the library, the bar, the barbershop, even the opera house. Guests are guided from one nostalgic scene to another in groups of five, staying in each for about 45 minutes, not unlike a high school schedule. Aides play cards with them, help them paint, tell stories, and in one particularly poignant moment recently, had them copy inspiring messages on Halloween cards for sick children at a nearby hospital and sign them with, I love you. A respite for caregivers. The concept of reminiscence therapy villages grew outside Amsterdam, Netherlands, with a small town that's actually an assisted living facility called Hogeveen. A report in the Journal of Dementia Care noted that residents of Hogove settled easily and, as a result, may need less medication than those living in traditional homes. Glenora is different in that its participants, don't call them patients, go home at the end of the day. We are creating an extra step between being at home and being in assisted living, says Scott Tard, CEO of George G. Glenner Alzheimer's Family Centers, which operates two traditional dementia care centers in the San Diego area, in addition to Glennertown Square. And research indicates that reminiscence therapy helps those with Alzheimer's and other forms of cognitive disease feel better in the moment, often calming their agitation, a painful hallmark of the condition. It can also, according to some research, bolster cognitive ability and reduce depression. When I first heard about reminiscence therapy about 10 years ago, I was skeptical, says Richard Isaacson, M.D., director of the Alzheimer's Prevention Clinic at Weill Cornell Medicine and New York Presbyterian in Manhattan. But my mind has changed. Being in this kind of comfortable and safe environment where you are offered a structured way to remember the past may boost chemicals in the brain without side effects, and that boost could have a ripple effect. It means you could sleep better, and if you sleep better, you're more well-rested, and memories are consolidated during sleep, so you might have better cognition. This doesn't reverse Alzheimer's, but it does have a symptomatic benefit that extends long beyond the hours a patient spends inside a place like this. Caregivers, husbands, wives, and children benefit as much from Glennertown Square's setup as the participants. Take, for instance, Joy Tennyson, a 37-year-old San Diego deputy sheriff whose mother, Susie, moved into the home he shares with his wife early last year. It strains every aspect of your life, but it's brought our family closer, Joy says, recalling the days when he would be at work and his mother would call 20 times in 1 hour asking the same questions. He enrolled Susie, 70, in Glenner when it opened in August, happily paying the $85 a day, $425 a week, for care from 8:45 a.m. to 5:15 p.m. While that's some 20% higher than the average cost of adult daycare, Joey, who has visited several nursing homes and assisted living facilities, says it's well worth it. Private care averages around $20 an hour nationwide, so he sees Glenner as a savings. Plus, Joey says, this is not just a bunch of old people sitting around a table, like he's seen in many other homes. Susie had a tough time during her first days at Glenner. She was agitated and uncomfortable and called home constantly, Joey remembers. And yet, he says, she seemed comforted by the portraits of Eisenhower and Roosevelt on the wall and the music. I don't think she thinks she's in the 50s, he says, but it all feels familiar to her and safe. To ease Susie's agitation, Glenner caregivers tapped into what they knew about her. She used to be an accountant, so they printed spreadsheets for her to fill out and gave her a desk to work at. I'm not saying my mother is getting better, Joey says, but she has a purpose now. She even asked us to buy her new dresses because she wants to look good. She got her dignity back. This article was written by Jennifer Wolfe, who is a National Magazine Award nominee who specializes in health reporting. Next, we've got an article with the heading Fraud Watch. It's called The Website Wolves. They claim they will build you a top-notch website and set you up to make money online, but in many cases, it's all a sham. Don Simmons, 66, has run a successful pool maintenance business in South Florida for over 20 years, but health problems and too many long days in the hot sun left him hoping he could find a new source of income. So he was pleasantly surprised 2 years ago to find an email from a company that offered to help aspiring entrepreneurs set up their own internet business. For only $50, they could get Simmons up and running. Even though Simmons, his name has been changed to protect him from retribution, had never run a website before, he figured, why not try? So he found a drop shipper that would get him access to over 1,000 products to sell. He arranged to accept credit cards. A basic website got built, as promised. Voila! In a month, he was open for business. But as weeks turned into months, not a single person visited Simmons' website. But the telemarketers, well, they pounced. Even before the site went live, web developers started to bombard his phone with pitches to help him grow the site. Each started with the same line, "How are you progressing with your business?" Simmons wondered how they knew he had a website and how they were able to find him so easily. WebKit bait. The answer, says Lois Greisman, Associate Director at the Federal Trade Commission, FTC, is that scammers offer inexpensive web design kits simply to generate leads. If you pay $50 for a kit, that's the teaser rate. After that, you'll be bombarded with telemarketing calls and online solicitations, Greisman says. We see leads that come from the sales of these web kits sold for 3 to 4 times the purchase amount. In other words, a scammer will pay the original website developer as much as $200 for your contact information. That's why Simmons started getting so many offers for help. Each company told Simmons he would never make any money with such a basic website because there's so much competition out there. However, for a certain price, $3,000, $5,000, $15,000, the price varies depending on the company and the pitch. These callers claim they can upgrade it to generate lots of sales. Simmons ignored most of these calls because he didn't want to waste more time or money. But one caller from a company in Washington State was particularly persistent. He called and spoke to Simmons roughly 9 times per week, each time telling him that for only $7,500, he could realistically see income of $50,000 the first year. Simmons was still skeptical, but thought that even if he could make half that amount, he would be happy. The salesman gave him 3 references. Simmons was unable to reach 2 of them, but the 3rd person answered. He ran an online website that sold holsters for guns. He said the company Simmons was considering was for real and had helped him build a successful website. So Simmons took a deep breath and bought the gold plan for $7,500. Over the next month, he heard nothing. Finally, he checked in to see what was up. The next day, he was told it was finished. He was underwhelmed. It looked like something I could have done myself, not the type of thing you would expect for $7,500, Simmons says. Plus, the site didn't show up when he Googled its name. The company offered to fix that by adding more keywords for a $1,000 fee. He reluctantly agreed. In the end, Simmons invested over $11,000 in the website. The only thing he ever sold was a $15 baseball cap to one of his friends. A growing problem. Is Simmons's experience typical? Absolutely, based on the roughly 3 dozen complaints to law enforcement agencies about web developers that AARP reviewed. Each closely mirrored Simmons's experience. The low-cost starter pitch, the telemarketing calls, the promises of big incomes, and the bitter outcome. The average complainant's age was 68, and the average dollar loss was close to $17,000. One woman, ironically a 72-year-old former Medicaid fraud investigator, spent $35,000 on various web design services, yet got nothing for them. The largest dollar loss was $67,000 sent by a 75-year-old disabled veteran from Plymouth, Michigan. While business opportunity scams usually don't involve outright theft, they are illegal because of their marketing techniques. If you promise somebody that they will make $10,000 in 90 days, you have to have a basis in reality for that claim, says Greisman at the FTC. Otherwise, you are in violation of statutes involving unfair and deceptive acts and practices, UDAP. At the federal level, these are policed by the FTC. State Attorney General offices also pursue these cases. However, most UDAP cases are tried in civil courts, so defendants rarely go to jail. That's why consumer protection lawyers say they play a constant game of whack-a-mole, shut down one outfit and another pops up. Still, Greisman says, the FTC has stepped up prosecution of WebKit scammers as part of a larger effort to crack down on fraudulent work-at-home schemes. For example, in 2017, the FTC sued Bobby J. Robinson, who advertised online as workathome.edu. The complaint alleged that Robinson used misleading advertising in selling web business opportunities, including an online ad that read, "A Texas mom makes extra $8,000 a month in her spare time on the computer without selling anything." The FTC complaint alleges that this and other earnings claims were misleading and not based in reality. Make no mistake, work-at-home schemes have been around forever, but the sheer scale and reach of the Internet as a platform has reinvigorated interest, as has the growth in independent contractors working in the new gig economy. U.S. e-commerce sales hit $360 billion in 2016 and are expected to nearly double to $638 billion by 2021. A lot of money is being spent online, so people think a lot of money is being made online, Greisman says. It's hard to appreciate how incredibly difficult it is. You don't just snap your fingers and become an online seller. What does Simmons think of the firm he worked with? I think they are a scam. I received virtually nothing from them that I couldn't have done myself, and I was never able to make a single dime from my investment, he says. State and federal agencies continue to investigate firms like these. I'm sure there are legitimate companies out there, but just know that if you sign up for an inexpensive web design package, you will start getting a lot of calls from people wanting to help you fix it, Simmons says. My advice is, don't do it. This article is by Doug Shadell, who is the director of AARP's Washington office and has written about fraud for more than 20 years. He co-wrote the September bulletin cover story, Inside the Dark Web. The article has a little sidebar here, How to Avoid Web Design Scams. Be wary of income claims. A promoter must disclose detailed proof when claiming you'll make a certain amount of money in a given time. Look at disclosure docs. A promoter must detail their cancellation and refund policies and share past legal issues. They also must provide references from similar buyers. If you can, interview them in person. Research. Enter the company name or its principal players and words like complaints or scam into a search engine to see what emerges. Also contact the State Attorney General's office. Get expert help. Consult an attorney, accountant, or other business advisor before you put any money down or sign any papers. Now, still in the AARP December bulletin, we have a question and answer session with astronaut Jim Lovell. And the interview was conducted by John Saraceno. The headline is, It Appeared to Me That God Had Given Mankind Sort of a Stage to Perform On. Former astronaut Jim Lovell, 90, who survived the near calamity of Apollo 13, talks about being one of the first to see Earth from deep space. Christmas Eve will be the 50th anniversary of Apollo 8, your first Apollo mission and the first to orbit the moon. What's your memory? We had pictures before of the far side of the moon, so we knew what to expect. What we didn't expect was to see the Earth as it really is. I put my thumb up to the window and could hide the Earth. Suddenly I realized that I am 240,000 miles away, but behind my finger is a planet with about 4 billion people. That told me in a moment just exactly what we are in the universe. Did your philosophy change? There's an old saying, I hope to go to heaven when I die. Suddenly it dawned on me that we went to heaven when we were born. We arrived on a planet that had the right amount of mass to have the gravity to contain water and an atmosphere just at the proper distance from a star. It appeared to me that God had given mankind sort of a stage to perform on. I guess how that play will turn out is up to us. You reached the moon on the ill-fated Apollo 13 in 1970, but never touched it. Bittersweet? Well, yeah. My career goal was to land on the moon. I think I would have retired a couple of years after that, but I didn't. For about 5 years, I was kind of disappointed. What was your most anxious moment? The explosion. We, Lovell and fellow astronauts Jack Swigert and Fred Hayes, saw we were losing our oxygen. Things were getting desperate. But we didn't have a solution yet. The only thing we could do was go into the lunar module and see if it was possible to use it as a lifeboat to get home. Of course, it turned out to be possible. Houston, we have a problem, became an indelible catchphrase. Your memories? I was coming into the command module and Jack was talking with Mission Control. He said, "Okay, Houston, we've had a problem here." But Mission Control did not hear him. "This is Houston. Say again, please." I spoke for Jack. "Houston, we've had a problem." The problem was that we were losing oxygen. One of the tanks was empty and the second one was going down. The quote became iconic because it fits into millions of situations people experience every day. Every time you turn around, you seem to hear, "Houston, we have a problem." I wish I had copyrighted it. Tell the truth. Did anyone on the crew say, "We'll never survive this"? Honestly, no. We never had that thought. As long as the situation wasn't hopeless, we thought positive. Any positives from that near disaster? NASA called it a failure at the beginning. It wanted to sort of forget about Apollo 13. Suddenly it dawned on us that 13 was the best thing that could have happened to NASA at the time. People were tired of hearing about NASA. Then the world realized, the U.S. in particular, what we could do if people put their minds to it, and how good leadership, the mission, and teamwork can overcome adversity. That is the story of Apollo 13. Do you believe that the attitude, "failure is not an option," still exists in our nation? The notion is that we don't give up. You can have that feeling, but sometimes you won't be successful. In the case of Apollo 13, it worked out. I modified that phrase in my speeches. Success is the only option. What defined the early astronauts? Originally, we were all test pilots. We sort of lived on the edge. We tested unproven airplanes for the military. We always expected something to go wrong. If you analyze the people that went into space, they're people who live with risk. I think you are born with this sort of impulse. It satisfies egos, gives a sense of accomplishment. We were the Lewises and Clarks of space exploration. Where should NASA voyage next? NASA should really concentrate on revisiting the moon. There's a lot of talk about going to Mars, but people don't really understand how far away that planet is and the problems to overcome sending a live crew. We've sent sophisticated robots there that have roamed the surface. We know more about Mars than Neil Armstrong knew about the surface of the moon when he walked on it. We should go back to the moon, examine it thoroughly, make flights routine and reliable, and then make a successful Martian trip. What do you think of privatized space travel? I have doubts and questions about the commercialization of space. The definition of commercialism is that you have to make a profit. This is entertainment. I met Jeff Bezos last year, a really nice guy. He wants to put people in suborbital flights at zero gravity for 2 to 3 minutes. It has been done before. You pay a lot of money, then you come back to Earth. Now we're going to round out today with a couple of entries in AARP's Ask Our Experts column. The first question is, "My husband is burying us in junk. What can I do?" It sounds like he might be a hoarder. Discuss your concerns with him in a non-judgmental way. Would he see a mental health professional? Therapy has proved helpful in controlling the need to acquire things. Reducing a compulsion even a little would improve your lives and create a cleaner, safer home. This answer is from Julia L. Mayer and Barry J. Jacobs, co-authors of AARP Meditations for Caregivers. And then we have, digital personal assistants are everywhere. Do I need one? Personal assistants such as Amazon Echo, which answers to the command Alexa, Apple HomePod, Hey Siri, and Google Home, OK Google, or Hey Google, are cool devices that sit in your house and wait for your voice commands. They connect wirelessly to various smart home devices and let you control those devices with simple commands. You can ask them to turn on the TV, stream music, tell you the temperature, suggest a good restaurant, and more. They are useful for completing tasks that you find physically challenging, like getting up to turn out the lights. Otherwise, they are more of a want than a need. And this response is from Michael Miller, who is the author of AARP's My Smart Home for Seniors. Now, you can send your questions to Ask Our Experts at AARP Bulletin, 601 East Street, that's 601 East Street Northwest, Washington, D.C., 20049, or you can email them at askourexperts@aarp.org. Now we've just got just enough time for a poem or two, which I always like to end with. This is by Mary Oliver's New and Selected Poems, winner of the Pulitzer Prize, published by Beacon Press. And this is Mussels. Now this is Mussels as in the seafood, not the anatomical mussel. In the riprap, in the cool caves, in the dim and salt-refreshed recesses, they cling in dark clusters, in barnacled fistfuls, in the dampness that never leaves, in the deeps of high tide, in the slow washing away of the water in which they feed, in which the blue shells open a little, and the orange bodies make a sound not loud, not unmusical, as they take nourishment, as the ocean enters their bodies. At low tide I am on the riprap, clattering with boots and a pail, rock over rock. I choose the crevice. I reach forward into the dampness, my hands feeling everywhere for the best, the biggest. Even before I decide which to take, which to twist from the wet rocks, which to devour, they, who have no eyes to see with, see me like a shadow bending forward. Together they make a sound, not loud, not unmusical, as they lean into the rocks, away from my grasping fingers. And another shorty from the same book, Spring. In April the morgan was bred. I was chased away. I heard the cries of the horses where I waited, and the laughter of the men. Later the farmer who owned the stallion found me and said, "She's done. You tell your daddy he owes me $50. I rode her home at her leisure, and let her wherever she wanted tear with her huge teeth, roughly, blades from the fields of spring. And now that is it for today. Our episode of Modern Maturity is over for the week, but I hope you'll listen next time. I'm Florence Nash reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service, and our programming is coming to you from Salibi Chiropractic. Salibi Chiropractic welcomes the geriatric community with any neck, back, or hip issues. Call 919-782-4733. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. And you can hear this broadcast as a podcast after it's on the radio at TriangleReadingService.org. So long until next time.